Hello and welcome to My Mom's Basement, presented by Barstool Sports and 3Chi, of course. I am your host, Robbie Fox, and today we've got another From the Top Rope edition of the show. Myself and Jared Carabas got to reunite with the Big Show, and the last time we interviewed him was over 3 years ago, but I remembered it going really well. I remembered him being a great guy, a great storyteller, and he did not disappoint for the rematch, if you will. This show is brought to you by 3Chi, as I reminded you before. 3Chi is the leader in hemp-derived cannabinoid products, and all products are made in the USA with USA-grown hemp. If you don't know by now, what this is Delta-8 THC. It is a federally legal version of THC derived from hemp. So generally, Delta-9 THC is derived from marijuana, and that's what gets you high. That's what gets you, you know, the psychoactive effects going in your brain. This is supposed to give you a similar buzz and all of the medicinal effects of Delta-9 without any of the laziness, the anxiety, the paranoia, or the mental fogginess that Delta-9 comes with, and it really does work for me. I don't know if you hear it right now, but I'm on some 3Chi right now. I was hitting the vape this morning, a little wake and bake. I love it. It gets the day started for me. It gets the day finished for me. Little hits in between get the day going for me. I absolutely love the edibles, the vapes, the tinctures. I love all of their products, and I swear to you, this stuff works. And 3Chi isn't just the best in the Delta 8 industry. They invented the industry. They are at the forefront at it. So if you go to 3Chi.com right now, that is the number 3Chi.com, to shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, and oils, you can use the promo code BASEMENT at checkout to receive 5% off your order. You must be 21 or older to purchase, and this will show up on a drug test. So, you know, if you are, if you have to operate heavy machinery or you got to be drug tested for work or any of that shit, this might not be the product for you. Otherwise, if you're sitting in like me, if you're, you know, on the couch throughout all quarantine, watching TV shows, movies, stuff like that, blogging, this stuff is perfect for you, I promise. Now let's get into this interview with the legendary Big Show.
Well, it's the Big Show. Yes, it's a big fat show tonight.
Okay, welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. It is Robbie and Jared with a From the Top Rope interview here, and we are joined by a very special guest, someone that we were joined by years ago on
2017?
From the Top Rope. Yeah, it's been a while now. The Big Show is here, the one and only. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Just, you know, down here in sunny Florida, dealing with the heat and humidity, so it's a lot of fun.
The clean shave look is throwing me off. I have to be honest with you.
I just got sick of dealing with a beard. You
know,
it gets to be like too much beard and trims, and it's hard to go to a barber now to get it trimmed, to get it taken care of. And if it gets long, I look like a woolly mammoth. Mm-hmm. I just said, you know, we'll go for the egg, the incredible edible egg. That's what we'll go for.
Yeah,
you're one of these guys that's had some stuff to do during this coronavirus thing, though, because you've got Netflix, right, with the Big Show show. So I'm sure you've had stuff to promote with that, and you've had the new Mattel lines coming out. You're doing press with us. How has the Netflix thing been going? Because I'm a guy that I remember when Knucklehead came out, and I bought that from Redbox to get it. You know, you've been acting for a while. Do you enjoy doing that stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a natural transition, but the Big Show show has been a project that I've hunted for a long time. Back when I was fortunate enough to be on Saturday Night Live with The Rock. I got that bug for that live comedy interaction. And I grew up as a kid that was a fan of, you know, Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days and all the different shows, Growing Pains, all the different things when I was growing up. So I liked those type of shows. And me driving Vince McMahon nuts every opportunity. Hey, if you get me one of these shows, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. So finally, the partnership came up with Netflix and WWE, and I guess the squeaky wheel got the grease. So
I love that.
So far, it's been a fantastic ride. I can remember my first day on set at Paramount. I got picked up in a golf cart with the Big Show show on the golf cart, and that was like when it really hit me, like, oh, wow, this is really happening.
Yes.
It's got your name on the title. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yes. We just got my name on it. It's pretty cool.
We recently,
a lot of pressure, though. A lot of pressure.
For sure. We recently interviewed The Miz, and we were talking to him about the cinematic matches that have been going on during the WWE in the coronavirus, right? Like the Boneyard match and the match right. that Bray Wyatt and John Cena had at WrestleMania. And his idea was that he would be jumping from sitcom to sitcom, including yours. He was like, I would love if I had a cinematic match to just show up in the Big Show show and be fighting the Big Show with the kids or something.
You know, I love Miz, and I tell you one thing about Mike. He's one of the hardest working individuals I've ever been around in my life. Like, I always make the joke because I had Miz as a tag team partner, and Miz I wanted to punch in the mouth, but Mike I have the most respect for. He's one of the hardest working guys I've ever met in my life. So we would love to have if we get season two, we would love to have Mike on season two. Miz, not so much. Mike, yes.
Yes. The when we interviewed you 3 years ago, after we were done with the interview, I was like, I didn't ask him the question that I wanted to. I'm going to ask it to you this time. So I want to say when I was a kid, there was like a documentary or a special that was done on you. And I'm 99% sure that it mentioned that when you were little, you used to eat toothpaste sandwiches. Is that true or false?
I wasn't little. That's like how those Bigfoot and Paul Bunyan rumors get started.
Yeah.
I had gone through a really rough time. I lost my dad, my grandfather, and my coach got fired all in the same year. Quit playing college basketball at Wichita State and was kind of just lost in that miasma of life. You know, what am I going to do next to myself? You know, all those things that hit a young man pretty hard. And I had been working at a bar called The Cowboy in Wichita, Kansas, as a bouncer. And I was selling cars during the day at a place called Rusty Eck Ford in Wichita, Kansas. And December had rolled around, and I owed the lunch truck $12. And the bar that I was working at had closed for remodeling and wouldn't be open till the first of the year. So there was a period right around in December where I literally had zero money in my pocket. I didn't have anything. I was getting a check in 2 days, and there was nothing to do. I mean, I didn't go anywhere spending money. I didn't have any money to put in the gas in the car. It's just one of those circumstances that everything just kind of hit all at once. And now that you're older, you know how to prepare for those. But as a young man, I didn't know how to prepare for it. So I remember I had a little bit of toothpaste left, and I had the heel of the butt of the bread was all I had left in the house. I didn't have mustard. I didn't have ketchup. I didn't have mayo. I didn't have anything. Literally, I had nothing in my house. And I had a toothpaste sandwich. And then I had another one with WWE with Michael Cole and I, because Michael Cole hadn't heard about the story. So in my lifetime, I've had two. It's not like it's a recurring thing.
Recurring thing.
Oh, my God, I left this toothpaste stuff. No, it was just one of those types of... If I look back now at that low point in my life and that struggle, it makes me appreciative. Like sometimes I just open the door of my pantry and just look at all the food. That gives me peace.
Right. Yeah. And I think because whenever I heard that story, I didn't understand or even know the negative connotation with it. I just thought that it was like, no, he just ate toothpaste sandwiches. So as a kid, I just started eating toothpaste sandwiches because I was like, this is it. This is the key. Like, if you want to grow up to be big and strong, if you want to be 7 feet tall, you're going to have to make yourself a toothpaste sandwich. So it was my mistake. I misread the situation.
That's all right. Well, it was funny when I was a kid. You remember the honeycomb commercials with Andre?
Yeah, I mean,
you guys are probably too young to remember it, but you can go on YouTube.
Seen them on YouTube, yeah.
Well, I was a kid when those commercials were coming out, and I drove my mom nuts. You got to get me honeycomb. Got to get me honeycomb. I want to be big like Andre. I want to be big like Andre. Wish granted.
Yeah, for real. I think it was the honeycomb. You knew.
And then years later, I got to do a promotion with Honeycomb where I was on the box of Honeycomb here last year, so it was pretty cool.
I don't know if you can see this. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to show you a video. This right here.
There's me with my little tights. Yeah.
Can you see? I'll run it back again. But behind you, someone's gonna raise their arm with Mr. Sacco on it. Did you see?
Yes, that you.
That's me. So that was the night that you choke slammed the Undertaker through the ring in Boston. If you could go back in time and give that version of the Big Show advice from your brain cabinet right now, what would you tell that guy?
First thing I would tell him is to invest in some knee pads. You know.
Yep.
Because at that time of my career, I wouldn't wear knee pads. Like, Giants don't wear knee pads. Blah, 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 blah. I was young. I was dumb.
That's crazy.
I would say invest in some knee pads and probably definitely have a pull him aside and tell him to work a little bit more on his cardio. Get some sleep at night. Quit going out and raising hell. Get more sleep. So,
I mean, it was the attitude era. I'm sure you had to be raising
hell. It was the attitude era, believe me. I ran really hard in the attitude era, believe me. Yeah. I was definitely a real life Viking Raider back then. So, you know, now my big excitement is, you know, like 11 p.m. rolls around. I'm looking for, you know, like sleep.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you've got this new Mattel Decade of Domination elite figure coming out. And I think pretty it's cool. Interesting. You've been an action figure for the majority of your adult life, I think. What has it been like watching yourself like evolve from the early, I'm sure, not moving very much action figures to now where it's like, holy shit, I have a miniature version of the Big Show with me.
Right.
You know, it's pretty amazing. I actually didn't really pay attention to a lot of it when they first came out. I did. But you get involved in the work. It's hard to keep track of everything that's going on around you and what's being made of you and stuff like that. I've never been a guy that's focused on that, but you know, some of the guys, you know, Matt, who used to be, you know, Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins, those guys are really into action figures, you know, and we had a discussion one afternoon about action figures. I told him the story about one of the craziest ones I'd ever seen was an action figure of the Giant, but he had a little red button on his ribs. And when you press the button, it vibrated. And I said, well, what is this? They go, oh, you're shaking because you're angry. I said, I don't think so. Needless to say, that was one of those marketing ideas I think that they made. I mean, I could get it if the fist swung or the boot kicked out. I mean, you know, but just sit there and go. I don't know. It's like a pinpoint stress massager for behind my ear. I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But you've seen a lot of ones. Some of them look like you. Some of them. The heads are seem like they're interchangeable. Everybody has the same facial expression, just depending on when they cut the hair.
But right.
Over the years, the technology has gotten pretty incredible. What we go through now to get the facials for those action figures is we had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. But I can tell you, it's they get every single angle of your face possible. It's unreal.
They get one of those like circular cameras and just do the full scan.
There's hundreds of cameras. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. So, like when you sit there and look at it, you're like, wow, I feel like, you know, I'm an astronaut here. I'm in a space shuttle or something. It's pretty crazy.
So you don't like, you're not like collecting all the action figures over the years, but do you like, what type of memorabilia are you keeping as like mementos from your career? Like, do you have like replicas or the original copies of like titles that you've won or anything like that?
I have one title that Paul Heyman gave me when I beat Brock Lesnar in the Garden. Paul Heyman put that in a nice case and sent that as a picture to me. I have that. I have one picture of myself, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, and John Cena after WrestleMania in Phoenix. We were all pretty relaxed. It was a good night. I have a bunch of stuff. Do you remember the WWE All-Star video game that came out?
Yeah.
It was like an arcade style.
They had made like these 7-foot tall cutout cardboard posters, you know, for WWE All-Stars. And there's one of me. I have about 3 of them in a box and they take up one whole side of a wall in my storage area. You know, they're just these giant cutouts of that cartoon Big Show character, which is pretty cool. Although to me, it looks more like Wilson Fisk, but you know,
that,
I look at it for motivation going to the gym. Like, yeah, that's where we need to keep working towards that. Mm-hmm. I have some little things here and there. I've never been much of a collector for stuff because I've never been a what happened yesterday kind of a guy. I'm what's today, what's tomorrow. I think personally for me, to sit down and put all that stuff up and bask in it, it's not how my mind works. I mean, I like to move forward with today and tomorrow. I think at one time in my career stops and I'm done doing whatever. Sure, it might be nice to put all that stuff up. You know, I mean, they always send you the stuff, so it's in boxes and put away, and some of it's in storage. So one day I'll go through it and hang some stuff up. I keep some things. I got a pair of boots It's got apparently John Cena and I somewhere over the years, I forget where it was, we both busted each other open somewhere, but I kept those boots because there's his blood, my blood's on it. I had a lot of fun working with him.
That's so awesome.
I don't think I busted him open. At least I hope I didn't. Anything else.
But knowing
John, he probably busted himself open because he's hard headed. But
right.
You know. Some little stuff like that. You know.
So if you're not like the big momentum or memento guy now, do you think like knowing what you have, is there one piece that you'll look back on later on where it's like the, like I, if you say you have 20 pieces, right? And 19 of them, you're like, ah, well, whatever. If it goes up, it goes up. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But there's one where it's like, don't touch this. Like I need this for eventually. Like what's going to bring back the best memories for you?
That's a really great question. There's a couple of things I have that are pretty personal. That one picture of, like I said, there's a picture of Taker, Cena, and Shawn Michaels and I that's I don't think I'd ever part with. There's a picture of Vince McMahon, Mark Henry, and myself that I will never give up. And there's a good one of Vince and I over in Afghanistan and Iraq when we're doing tribute for the troops. I think pictures is more of my thing. I'll never give up the title belt that Paul Heyman gave me. Because that's just, I don't keep titles. I've won them all, but I'm not a guy that's going to put every title I've won up on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Nice humble, Greg. I've won them all.
yeah. It's slide that in there real humble and a sneak tip, but it's weird. I've never been a guy that likes to show off those kind of accolades. I mean, even when I was a kid in high school and won all these all conference and all state and MVPs and all these different trophies, I didn't, you know, my mom put them up, but I didn't. Once I'd won it, I moved on to the next thing. So I don't know. I think for me, it's just like pictures and maybe that title I'll never part with. But anything else, I don't develop attachment to stuff like that. Like I wish I could. Like some people get into collecting stamps and coins and stuff. It's never been my thing.
That match where you won the title against Brock Lesnar is one of Kevin Owens' favorite matches. I don't know if we told you that last time, but when he was on our podcast, he made a point to bring that up as one of his personal favorite matches. Yeah.
That was a heck of a match because no one saw that coming because Brock was built like Brock was built. No one saw that coming. And then Heyman doing the turn was pretty cool. It was a good moment in time. But, yeah, it's funny. I wrestled Brock every night for like a year and a half, it felt like.
You've seen so many different incarnations of the locker room, right, throughout your years in the WWE.
Right.
And we asked the Miz about this just since his time. How has the locker room changed? So I want to ask you, since you came into the WWE, how has the locker room culture evolved until now?
Well, it's evolved differently. I mean, you know, when I first started, the locker room was an inner sanctum, but it was also an inner sanctum of sharks. I mean, everybody was fighting for a position there. It was a very fun environment, but one of extreme competitiveness. You didn't want to go out and have a bad match and come back in that locker room. You didn't. You wanted to go out and have the best match on the card. If the houses weren't doing well, if we had a 75% house, instead of house means size of the arena, if we only had sold 75 or 80% of the tickets, guys were mad. Guys didn't talk. Guys didn't play dominoes. Guys didn't play cards. I mean, because it was very much business and money driven back then, because the more business, better business we did, the more money the guys made, the position on the card we were, you made more money. So guys were very much business oriented money wise. Then it was all about the fans putting on the best matches and tearing down arenas like we did in the Attitude Era. I think some of that still carries over today. Guys are very competitive, but I think it's a little bit looser, more positive environment. I think that's one thing. Cause you know, the environment back in the old days, there was a lot of men in the locker room, so to speak. And they weren't going to give you a Band-Aid and a cookie if you skinned your knee. You got your ass up and you went to work. Mm-hmm. Today, I think it's a little bit more of a supportive group, which is fine. There's a lot more. It's still competitive, but the guys are different, are competitive in different ways. Like, it's okay for them to be competitive and joke and laugh, and that's how they push each other. They push each other that way. I mean, you know, sometimes back in the old days, we'd have fist fights in the parking lot. So maybe the new guys are a little bit better at communicating. I don't know. But I think it's a better environment than it used to be, for sure. I think it's a better work environment for working together as a brand. You know, what worked for us back in the old day is everybody was fighting so hard to get to the top that the brand grew with us. I think now everybody kind of understands they're okay if they're not on the last match. They're okay if they're on the match after intermission. You know, back in the day, if you were, you know, not in certain places in the card, you got mad because you didn't want to be on that card in that spot again. You wanted to move up. So I think that's the difference that I see with, you know, our business has shifted. It's more TV business. You know, when I started, it was more live event business. You know, now it's more TV and network buys. Like, we were concentrating on filling arenas and doing pay-per-view buys. That's where we made our money. So now the guys, you know, are a little bit more lax about live events. You know, I think it's just because their business is ingrained different. They're into social media and communicating with fans and doing videos. Back when I first started, you didn't communicate with fans. You kayfabed.
Yeah.
You know, nobody saw behind the curtain. So that's just how the business evolves. And it has to evolve with the times. You know, the talent has to evolve with the fan base.
Right. And throughout your whole career, like, you know, you as an individual have done a lot of promotional stuff, whether it's, you know, morning shows, radio shows, you're going out and throwing out first pitches. So who in your entire life, who has been your favorite non-professional wrestling big man that you've met, because you're the big show? So obviously we have to put the big show next to our big guy too. Who's that guy? And you can't say Shaq.
Well, you know, Shaq's an instant go-to. Honestly, there's two guys that I've met over the years. One's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold was just an incredible, charismatic, wonderful human being. His sense of humor is legendary. And another guy that's a big guy that I've actually gotten to know and become pretty good friends with, that there's a lot more depth to him than I think that people know, is Joe Magniello.
You know? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this guy is just, you know, he's a big guy. You remember from True Blood. He's a tall, athletic guy, good looking A to Z, but, you know, he's a good actor. He does his homework. He went to Carnegie Mellon, you know, so he's a lot deeper than I think a lot of people know with him. And then once you get to know him, he's a really fun, smart dude to hang out with. Like, I've picked up a lot of things from him. He's one of those people that I've met that I haven't been let down by meeting them. Mm-hmm. Instead, my value of them has gone up. So I would say definitely Arnold and Joe are probably the two top that come to mind right now. There's some other people that I've met that were just completely wonderful, wonderful people to meet. You're just blessed to meet people in life and do stuff like that and run across people that enhance your life by meeting them.
Mm-hmm. Have you met Bill Russell
before? Try to give them a good experience as well. What's that?
Have you ever met Bill Russell?
Bill Russell, basketball player? No, I have not. Is he one of those? You know, I did meet Julius Erving. That's another one. I met Julius Erving at a trade show one time, and I was really impressed at how just completely chill Dr. J was.
Yeah.
I met Michael Jordan one time in Miami at the Forge, and it was a really crazy night. It was like one of those nights that the most amazing thing and the craziest thing all happened within 5 to 10 minutes of each other. Like, I'm sitting at a table with some people and Michael Jordan comes in, and like the restaurant stops, Michael Jordan comes in. Mm-hmm. And Michael Jordan was speaking to one of the guys who was at the table that I was with. They knew each other. And then, you know, Michael said, "Hello, Big Show." Like, Michael knew who I was. So, okay, I'm on cloud nine. I stood right up, like, you know, shook his hand. Like, I'm like, oh my God, Michael Jordan knows who I am. Like, I mean, like, I am fangirling like no tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Jordan went back to another private dining area, you know, with his group, and I'm still sitting there and I'm thinking, like, wow, Michael Jordan knows who I am, like, you know. And then I hear Big Show, and I'm like, what? And I look over, and then there's this guy, this, you know, very big black gentleman coming through, who's pushing chairs and people are trying to eat and their tables are getting bumped. and he comes over, and it's OJ.
Oh, my God. No.
Get out. I went from meeting Michael Jordan to now I'm meeting OJ, and I'm like, oh, okay. So, obviously, you know, I shake OJ's hand, and OJ's hands were massive, and he shakes my hand, you know. How are you doing? Just such a, you know, like he's shaking my hand really aggressively, and now I'm like, okay, I just met Michael Jordan, and I just met OJ. Okay, I need to go get some air. So I go outside the restaurant to get some air, and then I'm outside 45 seconds, and somebody slaps me on the back so hard they about separate two vertebrae in my neck. I got slapped so hard. I turn around, it's Dennis Rodman.
Oh, no.
The worm?
So, yeah, so the worm, and then, you know, Dennis wants me this is years ago. He wanted me to go to China and meet this friend of his in China. And I'm like, oh, I'm good, man. I don't do overseas very well. He says, nah, man, it'd be great. You'll have a lot of fun. They'll treat you like, yes, I'm good, man. Hey, man, give me your number. And it was like, it was the first time I felt like maybe a girl that was getting pressured by a guy to give up her number. You know what I mean? Because it was just like, let me have your number, man. Let me have your number.
You give Rodman a fake number?
We worked together before. And I knew Rodman, so it wasn't that big a deal. But I also know Rodman likes to go buck wild and have fun. I'm on a different plane of existence now. I'm not ready to go to the stratosphere like with Rodman. Mm-hmm. So then I give Rodman my number. He says, this is a real number, right? I said, yeah, man, I'm not giving you a fake number. So then he says, all right, man, well, I'm going to call you. We're going to go to China. I'm like, okay. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to China. I'm good. You know, I'm going to stay in the U.S. You know, if WWE takes a trip, I'll go work. But I'm not going to go over there by myself and get left. All I could think of was like, you know, some kind of, you know, Midnight Express run or something. I wake up chained without a kidney or something.
Yeah. Right.
So then the phone rings 3 minutes later. He goes, hey, it's Dennis. Just want to make sure you gave me the right number. I'm like, yeah, give me the right number, man. That was it. So that was my wild night in Miami where I met Michael Jordan. And these are just random encounters that, you know, you couldn't put together. So that's my world story.
Whatever came of the Dennis Rodman number exchange?
Yeah, like, did he ever call?
Follow up on China?
No, he never did. He never did. It's funny. I just think, you know, because, you know, here's the thing. Dennis, if you get to know him, he is super eccentric. We all know that. But he is a smart individual, but he likes to have fun. You know what I mean? And he's one of those type of guys that, you know, he could have fun in a prison camp. You know what I mean? His attitude is one of, you know, he likes to have adventure. He likes to laugh. He likes to be with friends, you know, but he's nonstop. If you go party with Rodman, you might not come back for 7 or 8 days.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I can't afford to take 7 or 8 days out of my life right now just to go disappear. So I knew from years ago, you better have your big boy party pants on if you're going to go with Rodman. So, I've retired my big boy party pants. I got dad pants now, so I make sure I go home.
Seems like
you made the right call.
Smart move. Right call. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I was getting anxiety for you thinking about going to China and then just being abandoned by Dennis Rodman. Like, there's no way if you went to China with Dennis Rodman that you would have stuck around with him the entire time. Like, he's gone. Like, you're probably going to bed at 11 somewhere. O'clock, like you said.
I'd have been left somewhere. Then, like, National Geographic would have found me, like, 20 years later living in the mountains, and they think they found the Yeti, but it was actually a big show that got abandoned by Dennis Rodman in China. So there you go.
Yeah, with that long beard to bring it
big,
full
long
circle.
Skullet. My hair will all grow out, be all gray, and they think they found – so that's what happened to Big Show. Rodman abandoned him. So there you go.
I don't think we could beat that story. I mean, that was phenomenal. Big Show, thank you so much. This was fun. I hope we get together before, you know, 3 years passes again.
Mm-hmm. I hope so, man. Hey, by the way, congratulations on everything, man. You guys are really kicking butt and taking names. Congratulations. This is such a good show, and thank you for having me on it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
We're going to get the Big Show three-peat at some point. We're going to have three-time guest Big Show.
Three-time guest. Hopefully after Corona, we could do it in person, finally.
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely. Stay safe, and hopefully we'll all, you know, hopefully all this stuff will pass and we can all get back to normal.
Yeah, you as well. All right. Thank you very much.
Stay safe.
Big Show, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye, guys. You bet.
I want to thank the Big Show for joining us once again. That was a great time, and I cannot wait for the next time. The three-peat. The Big Show three-peat. All right, everybody, as a reminder, you can go to 3chi.com and type in promo code basement at checkout, receive 5% off your order. You must be 21 or older to purchase. And if you're interested, I've been streaming a ton of Jedi Fallen Order on twitch.tv/thatrobbiefox, and I'll be doing a giveaway of some Star Wars toys once I reach 1,000 followers on that page. So follow me on Twitter and on Twitch for more details there. I'll talk to you guys next week. One love.